So we've heard a lot of great messages this weekend, haven't we? We heard about God's love for us. Joe Testa shared with us about that and how this incredible, powerful God cares about you. And Russell Brown shared about how it's good to have loves in your life, but really the love that should consume us the most is our love for God. Right, sister? And Stan Chi shared about one of the hardest issues we face in life, which is the people we live with and loving them. And we heard about that from him. And Blake Courtright shared about how we can reach out to those who are in need, those who are suffering, those who would be, in our context, the person like the Good Samaritan reached out to. And had quite a tearjerker at the end there with that YouTube video. I appreciated that. And then, who else? Dan Fitzsimmons shared about loving coworkers and how in the workplace, of course, the most loving thing you can do is preach the gospel, but he shared about how it's really hard to preach the gospel to somebody if you're not working hard at your job, if you're a slacker, if you don't have any credibility. So reaching out in love and building a credibility and looking for opportunities to find, you know, a hook in a conversation about something to bring up the subject of God and His love. And then this morning, Brother Dan brought it, huh? Yeah. Woo! Yeah. Apparently he had been listening to Fire on the Altar because he cut loose there. And, you know, that's really something that I appreciated too when I made my way through the Bible. I don't remember what time it was, but like just seeing the arc of God's story and how he interacted with his people and how over and over he's faithful and he's loving. That doesn't mean there's no wrath, right, Brother Dan? There's some wrath in there too, Nadab and Abihu. But by and large, God is very long-suffering and patient and willing to relent if his people turn from their wicked ways, right? So that was just so powerful. So now what we're going to look at is what to do when you fail. What to do when the person you're trying to love rejects you. What to do when you get knocked down. All right, because we're going to go from this camp and we're going to enter the world and we're going to face situations. And I hope that leaving today, you have the perspective that says, no matter what happens, I'm going to love this person. I'm going to show love to this person. I'm going to express love to this person. That's my goal. Is that your goal? I mean, look, if you leave here and you're a jerk, I mean, I don't know what to say. But like, not to say we're perfect, but like, just be a lover when you leave here. You know what I mean? Love whatever the need is. And we heard about that from, I don't know how I missed, Pastor Victor Gluckin bore his heart and soul to us last night in the... what was that t-shirt Zach is going to make? Catchphrases always miss the spirit or something. You know. Thank you. So the catchphrase remains, but the spiritual truth does not. But I tell you what, that was, you know, I know you're saying like, we already heard that, we already know that, but like, I needed to hear that. Because realizing that we need to be filled from God as our source of love rather than people. I mean, it's so easy to forget that, right? So we're gonna really press into that truth a little further this morning. And I want to look at with you Moses. Look at Moses together with you. Okay, there it is. It comes out eventually. And so I have 8 incidents in the life of Moses while he's doing his thing, wandering through the wilderness and before that. And I want to sort of use him as a case study. And I love Moses, because Moses is not full of himself. It says, actually, there's a verse that he's the humblest man on the earth. Of course, if he wrote that, I don't know what that means. But, you know, when God called him at the burning bush, Moses said, that's not me. Why don't you get somebody else? And God worked with him and had to really work. I mean, he almost like frustrated God there a little bit. And finally, Moses is like, all right, Operation Liberation, here I go. So then we get to incident 1. Very good. So let's flip over to Exodus chapter 4. It's a Bible sermon here this morning. We're going to be cruising through Exodus and Numbers. If your fingers are too cold, just listen, but I will not have the words on the screen. All right. because it's against my religion. No, I'm just kidding. I do that sometimes too. But today, you know, keep the fingers limber. We're gonna look through some scripture. Exodus chapter 4 is where we're gonna start. And so Moses, I believe, I'm convinced, is one of the greatest people that has ever walked this planet. I mean, and I hope you see that here. But in the beginning, it was a rough start. So Exodus chapter 4, verse 29, we read about what it was like when Moses first tried to get the elders on board. We read, "When Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the people of Israel, Aaron spoke all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people." And the people, what? Believed. Okay, so that's what you want, right? Moses comes. They don't know Moses. He comes to the elders of the children of Israel. Moses has been living out in the bush in Midian, right? So he shows up and he's like, "Hey, God spoke to me out of a bush." They're like, "Okay, here we go." And so he does the staff. He throws it down, turns into a snake. They're like, "Okay, this guy's got some skill. You know, he's not like the last one." And then he's got this thing with his hand where he kind of like puts his hand in here and it comes out leprous. And they, you know, then he puts it back in and his whole, so he shows them these signs that God gave him. And the people are like, "You know what? We believe you, Moses. We believe you, Aaron. We believe that God has sent you to deliver us from the Egyptians." This actually might be the best moment in Moses' entire life with the people of Israel. And it's just sort of like his intro. Verse 31, "The people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel, that he had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshiped." So they believed Moses, and they even worshiped God. That's really good. And then, of course, he marches into Pharaoh, right? And he says, "Let my people go. Thus says the Lord, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may have a feast to me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh says, "No. I will not let your people go. I don't know who Yahweh is. Heard of a lot of gods. This is Egypt. We got tons of them. Never heard of that one. And I'm not going to obey his voice." And you know what your problem is, you Hebrews? You got too much time to be thinking about such things. You need more work. You've got a bad work ethic. So we're going to take away the straw, same amount of bricks. You find your own straw, right? So he relayed the message to the taskmasters. And so the next day, the Israelites are slaves in Egypt, and they're working, they're making bricks, and they're scouring the land for straw. And at the end of the day, they get beaten. The foremen, the chief Israelites who are in charge of the work, they get beaten by the Egyptian taskmasters. And they're like, "We worked hard all day." And he's like, "Yeah, but you know, you had these guys come into Pharaoh saying you want to go have a feast to God in the wilderness. Obviously, you have too much time on your hands." Right? So these foremen, they go to Pharaoh, and he just kind of repeats that. And Moses and Aaron are waiting to hear what's going to happen. And this is where we pick it up in somewhere in the Bible. Verse 20, chapter 5, verse 22. No, I'm sorry, that's wrong. 5, verse 20. Chapter 5, verse 20. "They met Moses and Aaron, who were waiting for them, as they came out from Pharaoh. And they said to them, 'The Lord look on you, Moses, and judge, because you have made us stink in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants, and have put a sword in their hand to kill us.'" So this is Moses' first rejection by the people that he's trying to love. I mean, it's the greatest act of love to bring out, I would imagine, a people that is suffering ethnic cleansing to rescue them from that situation. Wouldn't that be an act of love? That's what Moses is involved in. And they say to him, "Moses, you stink. No, you made us stink. You were even worse. Not only do you stink, but you made us stink in the nose of Pharaoh." And he said, and they call a curse on him. They say, "The Lord judge you, Moses. Yahweh judge you." It's really a harsh statement if you really think about it. And so at this point, we get our first insight into what to do when you're trying to show love to someone and they reject you, and you're like, "I just tried to do something good and I just got knocked down." So this is what Moses does. Look at verse 22. "Then Moses turned to the Lord." There's basically your whole answer. I mean, I know that was last night's sermon, but here we are again. Moses turned to the Lord. And I love what he says. Moses turned to the Lord. Oh, Lord, why have you done evil to this people? He's complaining, right? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. I'll tell you why I love that. Is because God can handle your honesty. God can handle your honesty. When your life throws you a curveball, something goes horribly wrong in your day, you lose your job, maybe you get a bad grade at school, maybe you get in a fight with your boyfriend, you get in a fight with your girlfriend, fight with your spouse, maybe your kids don't say hi to you because they found a TV show they like better, you know? The question is, what do you do then? When you're rejected, when you get hit, what do you do then? And the answer for Moses and countless others is that you take your raw emotion and you go to God in honesty. This is what the Psalms are filled of. You go to God in all honesty. You don't do one of these prayers like when you're in front of a group of people. You give a much more honest prayer where you tell him how you feel. He can handle it. Better than any of us can, right? God can handle your emotion. He built your emotions, right? He knows how they work. He knows that they're like the waves of the sea, right? He's the designer. So you take them to him. You don't take them. Now, if you take them to Bradley, you say, well, I don't know what's wrong with this God. I mean, he sent me in here. He sucks. I don't like God at all. And I'm complaining to Bradley about God. Do you think God appreciates that? Well, we'll see. We'll see. He does not appreciate that. Now, if you say to him, I don't know why you sent me. You told me to do this. I did it. I don't know what's going on. I'm confused. I'm sad. I'm angry. Whatever. He can handle that. He can handle that. But what do? We, you know what we do? We binge on something, right? What we do is we're like, we have a situation, something bad happens, and we find that next show on Netflix, Amazon Prime, whatever your poison is, and Hulu, and you just dive in, and you don't dive in where you like dip the toe first. It's like head first. We won't see you for 3 episodes, right? And you're so deep into it that you lose sleep, and now the next day is worse than the last day, right? That's what we do, right? We take the plunge into the binge world of easy access television, or we take the dive into the pint of ice cream. Or we just sleep. Some of us will sleep. Like, you have a bad day, you sleep for 2 days. And then you come back out of it. You're like, what happened? I don't know. I was hibernating. Or some of us will go to pornography. That's not a good source. Well, none of these are really good sources. Or a bottle of wine. We'll just drown our sorrows in a bottle of wine. Or whatever it is. And so what we do is we feel the pain. Look, you're not going to, there's no way to not feel the pain. If somebody rejects you, you're honestly trying to love somebody and they reject you, just like Moses did here. He did everything right. And they said, God curse you, Moses. God curse. That's what they said to him. That's rejection. And Moses does the right thing. He doesn't lie to himself, doesn't lie to anyone else. He goes directly to God. And then he allows God to work with his heart. You have to allow God to work with you. It's no good just to like yell at God. Right? And Moses is never disrespectful to God, but he's honest about how he feels. Right? So we want to be like Moses. When you get knocked down in life, you go to God and you let him minister to you. And if you do that, then he can fill you with his love and you can keep loving. Essentially, this sermon is get up and keep loving. Let me hear you say that. Get up and keep loving. Look, you're going to get knocked down. I can't do anything about that. I mean, maybe Peter could do something about that. He'd stand behind you so you don't get knocked down. No, I'm just kidding. But look, you're going to get knocked down in life. Even Peter's going to get knocked down in life. There are going to be situations that come up where it doesn't go the right way. And there are things that we're all going to have to suffer. And when that happens, you have to figure out what to do. And what I'm saying to you is you get up and you keep loving. And the key to getting up and keep loving is to go to God with honesty in your heart, and then let him minister to you. Exodus 6 is filled with how God works with Moses. And God says to Moses, This is one of these I will sections that Dr. Joe Martin loves. You know, I will, I will, I will, I will. It just goes nuts on the I wills, right? It's like, I'm going to bring you out of the land. I'm going to humble the Egyptians. I'm going to do this. It's not going to be a festival in the wilderness. It's going to be the promise of Abraham I'm going to fulfill. I'm going to bring you to the land. He just goes crazy on all these, like, and Moses is just like, all right, yeah. All right, he kind of like gets a little more confident. He goes back to the people. They're just like, talk to the hand. He goes back to Pharaoh. He's like, I don't like you. He's like, all right, 10 plagues, let's do it. That's how the 10 plagues start, out of rejection and suffering. And then the first plague happens. Then the second, the third, all the way down to the 10th. Finally, they end up leaving Egypt. And they're on their way out. They make it as far as the shore of the Red Sea. And 600 war chariots are in pursuit. So this is incident number 2 here, Exodus chapter 14, verse 10. It says, I'll just flip over there. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. And they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, is it because there are no graves in Egypt? Is there not enough tombs in Egypt? Is that what the problem is, Moses? Is that why we're here? There was a shortage of cemetery space in Egypt, and you were just trying to help that problem. So you figure you take us out here and kill us all by the Red Sea. So we solve the cemetery space issue. Look at this. It's unbelievable. Verse 11. Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the wilderness. I mean, imagine if you're Moses here. Where does your head go? You've just seen the 10 plagues. Every one of the Egyptian gods made a mockery of. The frog god, the fly god, the river god, whose blood, who the river turned to blood. I mean, what does that do if you worship a river god? Right? I mean, Yahweh has asserted his supremacy over all the gods of Egypt, and now finally, he's about to get his, we know what's going to happen next, but they know. They're just like, why didn't you just leave us alone, Moses? You suck. We hate you. Right? So what does Moses do? Verse 13. Moses said to the people, fear not. Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you only have to be silent. They're complaining and talking. He's like, shh. Verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? I love that relationship they have. God's like, why are you complaining? Go! Move! Why do you complain to me? Tell Israel to go forward. Verse 16, lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the people may go through the sea on dry ground. Moses doesn't flinch. He keeps loving these people. They say to him, why do you want to kill us? And he doesn't flinch. He goes right to God with it. God says, why are you looking at me? You guys got to move. You guys got to move. I mean, if it were you, would you just succumb to the stinging words? Would you say, guys, we just had 10 plagues. We've got all the gold of the Egyptians in our backpacks. And we have the animals, and we have the kids, and we're all here, and we escaped. He doesn't do any of that.
He could have allowed himself to be offended by their rudeness. Instead, he reiterated to the people the promise of God, and God's right there, ready to go. All right, incident number 3. I told you I have 8, so I got to cruise. You know what I'm saying? Got to move. It's cold in here. Got to get through these. All right, grumbling for food. Exodus chapter 16. 2 months later. That's 60 days, just in case you didn't know that. All right, Exodus 16, verse 2. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, and the people of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger.
These people, Jacob. You know what I'm saying? I can you imagine trying to lead a group like this? Right? I mean, Moses is, you know, he's being faithful. They've seen it all. Now they've already just seen the Red Sea as well. Right? But they're hungry. I get hungry. I've been hangry. Anybody been hangry in the room here? Right? Yeah, sometimes you get angry and you grumble and you're like, pot roast my foot. You know what I'm saying? You just like, you grumble. I understand that. But this is more than that. This is like, look, I wish we had just died. I wish we died from God's hand during the plagues.
And then they accuse Moses again of bringing them out to kill them.
Because of the meat pots and the bread.
The meat pots and the bread.
There were slaves facing ethnic cleansing. And they're like, their faulty memory, their like selective memory. It's like, yeah, we did have meat. Like, all the baby boys were getting killed off, but we had meat.
Unbelievable. Look at verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. So God steps right in. He tells Moses the plan. All right, these people are hungry. Manna. That's how we got manna. And then they'll have manna like that every day until they enter the promised land. He just fixes the problem. Simple as that. So the people come to Moses. Moses goes to God. God says, I'm going to rain bread. Moses is like, all right, he's going to rain bread. Go out and gather it every day. It'll be great. Incident number 4, Exodus 17. All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages according to the commandment of the Lord, and he camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. All right, so last time it was no food. This time it's no water. Verse 2, therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, why did you bring us out of Egypt? To kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So now it's even worse. It's not just us. You're not just trying to kill us, Moses. You're trying to kill our children too and our animals with thirst. Verse 4, so Moses cried to the Lord, what shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out, and the people will drink.
Simple, right? What does he do? He's dealing with these people. They're rejecting him. They're like, why don't you just kill us? And he's like, he's not freaked out. I mean, you'll see, Moses does get to the end of his rope eventually. I mean, he is but a man. But what he does is he goes to God, and God's like, all right, so the problem is water. That's not a problem. Take that staff, hit this rock, I'll get you water. I mean, it's just really simple, isn't it? They were hungry, so God's like, all right, I'll rain you bread. They were thirsty, so he's like, hit the rock. I'll stand before you. God's invisible. I don't know if you knew that. Did you know that, Trent? God is invisible. So he's standing there, and he hits the rock, and God makes the rock split so that water comes out, however that works. All right, then we have incident number 5. This is the one with the golden calf. We just heard about this a little bit. Well, why don't you go ahead and flip over to Exodus 32. I just want to read a little bit more of this one. The simple fact is that in your life, you may lose people. Your best friend may ditch you. Your job may falsely accuse you. Your kids may hate you. Your church could kick you out. You may face social media bullying. Your spouse might cheat on you. Your family could desert you. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in our broken world. But if you have God, like Moses, he didn't have the people. He had God. And if you have God, that's enough. If everyone else leaves, if everything else goes wrong, if it's totally unfair, if everybody gangs up against you, nobody wants to talk to you, whatever it is, if you have God, that's enough. And if you can get to the place where that's true for you, you can get through anything. And when you get knocked down, you can get up and keep loving. If God is your source, if God is your sufficiency, if God is the one filling you, then when you get knocked down, because you're going to get knocked down, you can get up and you can keep loving. Look at chapter 32, verse 7. The Lord said to Moses, go down, for your people... God says to Moses, they're your people. Your people, whom you have brought up out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. Talk about devastating. If you're the leader of this people and you've been teaching them Yahweh is the true God, let me give you a little context. They had just received the Ten Commandments. Not only did God do the 10 plagues and brought them through the Red Sea, but then he torched an entire mountain. And he had a fire, kind of like Richard's fire, but bigger, continuously going on the top of the mountain to represent the glory of God. Moses is in the fire at this point when they're down there dancing around naked around a golden calf. Moses is in the fire with God. Now, God has audibly spoken the Ten Commandments. The very first of the, I mean, because ten's a lot to remember, right? But the very first one is, I am Yahweh your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. Second one, you shall not make for yourself a graven image. He put two there just so that it would be clear what he means, right? I'm your God. I just destroyed the Egyptian gods. Don't worship anyone else. Don't make a graven image, okay? So Moses is in the fire on the top of the mountain. He's there for 40 days. He's receiving the Ten Commandments. It says that God wrote it with his own, you know, finger or whatever. I don't think God actually has a finger, but like, you know, he wrote the Ten Commandments. And then God says, they're having a good time. God says to Moses up there, he says, these people, they've turned aside. Moses, they're not staying faithful. They've had this golden calf. And then we get this little gem in verse 9. And the Lord said to Moses, you know, I've seen this people. And behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone. Everybody's telling Moses to leave him alone, right? Let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, in order that I may make a great nation of you. Now, I don't think God's being dramatic here. We know the rest of the history. These people were a stiff-necked people. These people did not believe. It doesn't really matter what they saw and what else is going to happen later in the account here. They don't believe. And God says, you know, you got to take it from God's perspective too. Like, he's been around for a long time. You know, he's got a macro scope of the whole situation. It's not a microscope just looking at this one incident. He's like, look, I've got time, Moses, you know. You've got a couple of kids. We'll just grow the nation again, and maybe it'll be better this time, right? And Moses says, no. And he stands in the gap. You have a holy, just God who is ready to just make it easy. And then you have this people that they're dancing around, carrying on around a golden calf that the high priest, you know, like Dan shared, the high priest made the golden calf. The high priest of Yahweh made the golden calf. It was just unbelievable. So, and Moses puts himself right in between the two, and he says, verse 11, but Moses implored the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people? He steps in the gap. He intercedes. He puts himself in between the two groups. They have committed the worst sin. They are worthy of death. You know, based on the commandments that they had agreed to already, they would be worthy of death. So Moses comes down from the mountain. He's furious. He drops those tablets. They break. He runs down. He sees that golden calf and all the carrying on. And he takes that calf and he just pulverizes it. He knocks it down. He beats it up. He turns it to powder. He puts it in the water supply. And he said, you drink your God. See what becomes of it then. He made them drink their God. And then he grabs some swords, and it's like spanking time, except some thousands of people died. But he's still not sure that this is going to do the job.
So we pick it up in verse 14. Verse 30. The next day, this is chapter 32, verse 30. The next day, Moses said to the people, "You have sinned a great sin. Now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin." So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Alas, this people has sinned a great sin. They have made for themselves gods of gold. But now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, please blot me out of your book that you have written."
If that's not love, what is it? That is self-sacrificial love. I mean, Moses gets hit over and over and over by this people. They reject him, they reject him, they reject him. They say, "We don't like you. You suck. We hate you. You're trying to kill us. Go away." That's what they say to him over and over and over. I just read a few. I've got 8 of these, right? And I was being selective, right? "Go away, go away, go away." God says, "You know, I could just fix this real easy, Moses. This is not a big deal for me. Like, I blink and they're gone." You know? And Moses says, "No, take me instead. Forgive them, but if you won't forgive, just take me out." That's unbelievable self-sacrificial love. All right, we got to move. Number 6, grumbling about the manna. So, of course, God does pardon them, and he doesn't take Moses out of the book of life. Numbers chapter 11, I'm going to have to summarize a little bit here for you. But what happened here is, now that the people have been eating manna for a while, they're sick of it. They want variety. So Numbers 11, verse 4, "Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept again and said, 'Oh, that we had meat to eat.'" That's the first sin, right, Zach? "We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic." Right, Italians? The garlic, right? This is Nick in the back. Just garlic. "That's what they remember. But now our strength is dried up, and there's nothing for us at all but this manna." Hate manna! God is miraculously providing for them day after day, night after night, and they say, "He doesn't have enough flavor." They're in transition. You know, this whole period I'm describing to you is only like a year long. It's like a year and a half. That's all it takes to get to the promised land.
It only takes a year and a half. At this point, Moses gets super angry, and he goes to God, and he's like, "Why have you dealt ill with your servant?" This is verse 11. "If I have found favor in your sight that you lay the burden on me." Verse 12, Moses says, "Did I conceive this people? Did I give them birth?"
Moses is just like, "I can't handle the people. I'm not their mother. You call me to do this. I'm trying to do the thing. You gave me the thing. I'm trying to do the thing." And they're just...
And what happens? God works them. God's like, "All right, I'm going to have some birds fly in real low. You'll be able to catch them. Quail, you can eat them." Once again, Moses goes to God with his pain. That's what you got to do. When you get knocked down, when you get frustrated, when you show love to someone and they're still difficult. 5 years later, they're still difficult. And you're consistently expressing love to that person. They're still difficult. You know what you do? You go to God, because he's the only one that can recharge you. You get knocked down, you get up, and you keep loving. All right, incident number 7, bad report from the spies. Now, once they finally got to the promised land, it was a year and a half after they left Egypt. They get to the promised land, they send in the 12 spies. The spies come back and they say, "It's a good land, but it's taken. It's not just a little bit taken. We've got fortified cities, we've got giants, they've got armies. There's no way we can win this thing." And so the people say, "Oh, I guess we can't go to the promised land." This is roughly the equivalent to parents with a carload of kids in a minivan driving from Canada to Disney World in Florida and suffering. "Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there? I gotta pee.
Bobby hit me, you know, and just like dealing with all that with little kids, driving all the way down, you finally get to the promised land, to Disney World, right? And you get to the parking lot, and it's the moment. It's the moment. You were supposed to open the door, and they run out, and there's Mickey Mouse, woohoo, or whoever it is these days, Elsa, ha ha, and she's frozen. But you get there, and you open the door, and it's been like a two-day, three-day journey. You've already spent like hundreds of dollars in gas and hotels. And you say, "We're here," and the kids say, "We're not going." Can you imagine that, Peter? I mean, they sit there and they look at you in the face and they say, "We are not going. We're going to stay in the van." That's what happened. A year and a half after the 10 plagues, he gets them to the promised land and he says, "Go." And they're like, "No. We're not going in there. There's giants in there." This is a God that's bigger than a giant. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got them. And it gets really bad. Look at Numbers 14:11. God says, "How long will this people despise me?" They don't just hate Moses. God's like, "What? They hate me too. How long will they not believe me in spite of all the signs that I have done among them? I will strike them with pestilence and disinherit them. I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they." Second time, God says to Moses, "Can I kill them? Let me just wipe them out. Let's just start over with you." But Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear of it." Look at, skip down to verse 17. "And now please let the power of the Lord be great as you have promised, saying the Lord is slow to anger." So now he's quoting God's attributes back to God. "God, you said you're slow to anger. Remember that? Slow to anger, right? That was you. Compassionate, right? Steadfast love, forgiving." That was on the list. So he goes through that. Verse 19, "Please pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your steadfast love, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt until now." Then the Lord said, "I have pardoned them according to your word." Ladies and gentlemen, that is love. This people had just picked up stones. We didn't read that part. This people had just picked up stones. Can you imagine that, Shannon? You pick up a rock in each hand and you say, "We're going to kill Moses and we're going to go back to Egypt." This is not rhetoric anymore. Soon as the rocks are in your hands, and you've got, 600,000 men we're talking about here? Then you got women. Women could throw rocks, right? Kids could probably even throw rocks. My kids could throw rocks, right? So, I mean, you've got all these people. They've got rocks. There's a circle. You're standing in the middle with Aaron, and you're saying, "Let's go into the land." And they're just like, "How about this? Let's kill you and go back to Egypt." God's glory shows up, and God says to Moses, "Just move a little over this way. Let me just wipe them out." And Moses says, "No, no, no." And he prays for the people. These people literally want to kill him. We don't have it that bad. The stuff we go through. When's the last time somebody picked up a stone and was ready to throw it at your head, Blake? I mean, maybe a snowball, you know, but not a stone. Much less a mob lynching. And yet, this is what's going on. And God saves Moses, and Moses saves the people. And Moses, every time he gets knocked down, he gets back up and he keeps loving. All right, last one. Number 8, the revolt of the Levites. So they get sentenced to 40 years wandering in the desert as a consequence of their refusal to enter the promised land. And there's a guy there named Korah. I noticed that none of the people here are named Korah. Probably good, bad dude. And he and 250 of other Israelites, including Dathan and Abiram, they rise up, and they're Levites, but they're not priests. And they say, "Moses, you've gone too far. Aaron, you've gone too far. All of the congregation of Israel is holy. We can be priests too." And so Moses says, "All right, you want to be a priest?" Moses is like, as if this whole thing's my idea, right? Like, he's like, "I'm just doing what he says." So Moses says, "All right, well, tomorrow we'll have a priest off. You get your bronze incense. What is that thing called? A censer of incense. And you can make your offerings, and Aaron and his descendants, the priests, will make their offering. And whatever God accepts, God accepts." And then there's this incident where he calls to Dathan and Abiram. Moses calls them. He says, Dathan and Abiram, I want to talk to you. And this is Numbers 16:12. Moses sent to call to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, we will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us? Right? We're not coming. Moses is furious with these guys. He's like, this is the only time Moses ever prays, and it's not for someone's good. Let me tell you, you don't want somebody that close to God praying against you. Because some of you know what's going to happen next. Verse 15, Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, and I have not harmed them one bit. The next day they went to offer incense. God's glory appears, and God actually says to Moses, move over. Let me just wipe them out. Once again, Moses says, Lord, please forgive this people. And he once again says, or take me out of your book. And then they go down to Dathan and Abiram and Korah's dwelling place, to where their tents are. And Moses says to the people, separate. Separate from these guys. So the people separate. They're actually listening to Moses. And then the earth opens up and they go down and then it closes. It's just like, make a good movie. Right? So let me just conclude here. What's my point here? These are eight times that Moses got rejected, that he got knocked down. And over and over and over again, he does not falter. Instead, he goes to God, and he lets God work with him until he's ready to get up and love them again. Now, with the exception of Dathan and Abiram, and he never even prayed that they would die or anything. He just said, like, don't accept their offering. I think the judgment stuff is up to God. He's relentlessly loving. So what I'm saying is, you got to get up when you get knocked down and keep loving. You got to get up and keep loving. And I was thinking about this morning. Moses had no Jesus. Moses had no cross. He had never sung a single song about the cross. He had never heard of it. He had never heard of the cross. He had never seen that example of a man willing to die self-sacrificially like we're all so used to. He had never even seen it. And he could love like this. So what does that tell you? That tells you that you can love better than Moses. You say, oh, I'm not Moses. No, you're better. You're better than Moses. You've got Christ within you. We've got the Spirit working in us in new ways, fresh ways that weren't even available to Moses. We have Jesus at the right hand of God interceding for us. We can love better than Moses. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we ask that you would give us a heart to love. Help us to get up when we get knocked down. Help us to be relentless lovers, just like you relentlessly pursue us. We ask for your help in this today, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.